Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. It's about 7 past the hour. Glad you could make it. We, as you know, this Thursday, this week, is the 29th, and that's National Strike Day for the American middle and working classes. We certainly fit into the latter. We used to fit into the former. I guess we're still middle class. Damn sure working class. But October 29th, this Thursday, is National Strike Day. You can get all the information you want by going to nationalstrike.wordpress.com and finding National Strike October 29th. And simply put, what you will find there, it says, tell our government, the media, and the corporations that have been allowed to take over our country that the middle class and working people of the United States have had it. Make our presence known by our absence. On that particular night, there will be a rebroadcast of the Malloy Show. We are not going. I mean, you know, what else can you do, right? Except little symbolic gestures. We are at that point. I could no more suggest, you know, 500,000 or 1 million or 2 million people show up for a demonstration, which would be kind of pointless anyway. Or get everyone to just not show up anywhere, then I could fly to the moon. But this website, nationalstrike.wordpress.com, has done it. So Thursday evening this week, you will hear, if you tune in, a rebroadcast. And, of course, I invite everyone to participate. I really do. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America. This Thursday, October 29th, National Strike. You're going to do it, are you? Hello? Is this microphone on? Hello? Anybody out there?
Were you talking to me?
Never mind. You're noticing the chaos across the country regarding the flu vaccine, and so many doses were promised. About 1/10 of that promise is being fulfilled, and lots of reasons. You know, the eggs didn't work, or the flu virus is taking longer to grow. You know, and I'm sure it's all good, solid science, but the reason there is chaos about this, aside from the scientific reality, the biochemical reality, whatever you want to call it, that it takes so long, X amount of hours, days, weeks, whatever, to culture the vaccine, the way it is being done in eggs. Aside from all that, which is science, there is the chaos that the public health establishment in this country was thrown into as a result of 8 years of George W. Bush, with his corporate appointments that he injected into everything. You'll, no pun intended there. Well, yes, pun intended. Corporate appointments injected into everything in this country, including the public health system. So everybody now is standing around pointing fingers at the CDC or the Surgeon General's office or somebody. You know, why weren't we? I see these videos of people showing up here and then showing up there, and not the same people, and then going over here and then somebody over there looking for the vaccine, looking for shots, and it's not there. Somebody called a public health system, I forget what state, it's immaterial, and the recorded announcement when you went to the H1N1 flu vaccine selection on the phone menu, it gave a number to call to go get your flu shot. And what it was a drugstore, I think a Walgreens, that hadn't gotten it yet, the vaccine. It's mind-boggling, isn't it? Huh? But this is a direct result. Everything in this country was thrown into chaos. Every institution, every government office was thrown into utter chaos and confusion as a result of 8 years of Bush, if not brought completely to its obligatory, where it concerns its obligations, all these different agencies brought to its knees. FCC, you know, go through the alphabet. All of them utterly destroyed, rendered ineffective, rendered almost useless by the Bush crime family. Of course, that was the idea. So the public health system has not escaped. It is desperately trying to do what a good public health system is supposed to do, and that is take note of the health of the public, but not when it has been as tampered with by right-wing corporatists as ours has. Huh? Regarding the flu vaccine, got this email from Catherine. Dear Mike, this whole thing doesn't make sense to me. I was hoping or hope you'll mention it in tonight's show. First, it was declared late Friday night, which is a great way to bury something, about the national emergency declaration. Yeah, that was the other thing. President Obama has issued a declaration, is that right? That the H1N1 virus has now entered into the category of a national emergency, the spread of this thing, and so on and so forth. So anyway, Catherine writes, the whole thing doesn't make sense to me. I was hoping you'll mention it. First, it was declared late Friday night, which is a great way to bury something. Second, isn't a national emergency, shouldn't a national emergency be covered all day in the mainstream media? They've covered everything else about this flu. CNN Today said a White House source, not authorized to speak on the record, said this declaration isn't tied to, quote, current case count, end quote. If not, just what is it tied to? Future mutations? Forced vaccinations? Flu quarantine camps? Something sinister? That's not sinister? Anyway, Catherine goes, I voted for Obama, so my motive for writing has nothing to do with being a right-winger, as I am not. Rather, they, quote, quote, know something we don't, or something more sinister is in the works. I cannot think of any other reason for an emergency for a, quote, pandemic, end quote, that is due to peak by the end of October, for which there isn't even any vaccine. Something, Catherine writes, is amiss here. Also, in Der Spiegel, it's been announced that the chancellor and his ministers in Germany will receive a different vaccine from the common folk. Obama's own daughters have not even received it to date. There is no indication they will. As always, thanks for your show. I listen each night. And you did keep me sane through the Bush years. Catherine, I don't know about Obama's daughters. I have no idea. And I don't know about the German chancellor. That would be Angela Merkel. And her ministers in Germany will receive a different vaccine. I don't know. I have no idea. I just do a little talk show here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I hope you find some further information on that, Catherine, and let us know, and I'll certainly get it out there to our 37. Are we up to 40? We're up to 40 listeners now. Let me tell you something about being up to. I need to tell you very clearly and concisely, if you have thought about subscribing, now's the time to do it. We're losing renewals. I guess it's on the podcast subscriptions. I guess it's a financial thing, and I can certainly understand that. If the bleeding or the hemorrhaging of subscribers does occur, this program or continue to occur, this program is going to be very iffy if we'll be able to continue. And keep in mind that's part of the risk of going in business for yourself. And we accepted that when we set this thing up. We don't ask for donations. Matter of fact, we can't ask for donations. People can contribute like they do for podcast subscriptions. That's something different. But we're structured not as a nonprofit. We are structured as a profit-making company. Maybe someday that'll happen. But in the meantime, if you're thinking of subscribing and just been putting it off to the podcast downloads, commercial-free downloads, now's the time to do it. Go to MikeMalloy.com, and the information is there at the top of the page. This is a couple emails here at the beginning of the program. As soon as we come back from this break, and then we're going to get into some fairly disturbing information topics tonight. So, not that we don't do that every night. I understand. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Well, I'm dying of the flu. And I don't know what to do. Well, I'm done with the flu. Oh, and I don't know what to do. Well, my doctor gave me up.
You said I can't do no more for you.
It is 21 past the hour. Okay, a couple more emails. Like I said before, you folks write some very interesting stuff, and I'd like to share it with our, what, we up to 40 now? Our 40 listeners. This is from Michael in Auburn, New York, who writes, Mike, today I had lunch in a crowded downtown cafe, I guess in Auburn, where I had to squeeze into a small table right next to where our former mayor, a Republican, was sitting with an elderly lady. Hovering over them was a loudmouth woman who was ranting to the ex-mayor about every random issue that came to her little mind. She was trying to tell the elderly woman that the government is giving her money to black people, that universal health care will destroy Medicare, and that all the people on welfare are draining away money that should be going to seniors. Then she started carrying on about how all the crime in the country comes from illegal immigration and that everyone on America's most wanted list is an illegal immigrant. Of course, in reality, there's plenty of homegrown crime, some of the worst of it, white collar. But it's not as interesting to discuss that over a salami sandwich. What intrigued me was that because the former mayor was Republican, this woman thought her racist rant would be perfectly acceptable to him. The more I thought about that, the more disgusted I became. She didn't for a minute think that this former elected official would disagree with her unsupported, bigoted opinions. And this seems to be more and more common. Republicans, when speaking publicly or in mixed company, claim they aren't racist and that they want diversity in their party. But when they're alone or among their own ilk, they speak their hearts and they don't even expect that their fellow Republicans might find such talk distasteful. Later on, I was listening to the Malloy podcast where you named the 30 Republicans who voted against Senator Franken's anti-rape amendment. You called them sick bastards, which they are. Yet we're all brought up to be nice people, and we don't like to think of the people sitting next to us at lunch as evil, sick, dangerous human beings. But the truth is, their ideas and policies are ruining lives and destroying the world. I don't want to go to war with my neighbors in any literal way. I suppose the best strategy is to fight their ideas with rational arguments, which always leaves them in the dust. But so many of them can't or won't enter into rational discussion. Where do we go from here? Michael in Auburn. I don't know. I've made my position pretty clear on this, that trying to talk in a rational way to a right-winger, no matter what it's about, economics, foreign policy, religion, atheism, you know, it doesn't make any difference what the issue is an exercise in absolute bone-crushing futility. Right-wingers have been so just brain-scrubbed. I mean, like one of those stiff bristle brushes you have in the garage you use to clean your white wall tires, right? That's what's been used on their brains, and there's nothing left. The synapses have been burned out. The only thing that's left in there is empty space, and it seems to be an enormous amount of it, where the suicider or the drug addict or the guy that likes to hang out at the bunny ranch, in other words, the triumvirate of right-wing talk show speakers in this country, where they can pump as much garbage in, endless amounts of garbage. So there is no thinking there. Rationality is doesn't exist. A right-winger or a conservative or a Republican, especially the Republican base or an evangelical, they have certain belief system that is rigid, is brittle. When it starts to shatter, they scream and go nuts and grab for their Bibles and their guns rather than grabbing for an encyclopedia or a book on world history or, you know, math or chemistry. What am I talking about? George in Oregon writes to Mike, while visiting an office today, I happened to be exposed to an hour of the 700 Club. Uh-oh. Maybe I need to watch TV more, but I was absolutely astonished at what I saw. Under the guise of Christianity, quote-quote, I saw shameless plugs for donations with a story of a person who tithed to Pat Robertson's organization and then became rich because, you know, Jesus was working, looking out for her because of her support. Then I saw Robertson himself answer financial questions from viewers who must see him as some kind of sage. What I saw was a delusional old man who would probably be in somebody's 24-hour care if he wasn't obscenely rich. I also saw senile old Pat Boone selling gold. You have to see that to believe it. The level of gullibility in this population is alarming. Makes you want to run outside and scream, "Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi! Your only hope!" Keep doing the program. You're among our only hopes, George in Oregon. Well, I hope we can keep doing the program, George. You know what? I saw, he writes, I saw senile old Pat Boone selling gold. Jesus, when I was a kid, you know, Pat Boone would sing about, what'd he sing about? I forget, but a friendly persuasion and stuff. And he used to wear white bucks. I always wanted a pair of white bucks. You know, white shoes. I always wanted a pair of those damn things, but I had to wear Converse high top sneakers because we didn't have any money. And those were ones that were bought at the Salvation Army store. God damn you, Pat Boone, and your white bucks. We'll be back after the break.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. This is the Malloy program. Quick email here from, let's do Prairie 2's report for tonight, but he prefaces it with quick info. The state of emergency declaration that Obama made last Friday allows hospitals to set up emergency hospitals off the grounds of existing hospitals. Apparently, they're expecting things to get much worse when cold, dry weather sets in and the number of cases picks up exponentially. Normal flu doesn't even spread this early, and already many hospitals are stretching resources. I guess the only thing that is a saving grace about this, unless your child has died from the flu or your pregnant wife or mom has died from the flu, the only other saving grace is that the most cases are relatively mild. Somebody sent me an email about a horrific story of a woman who had a violent reaction and died from the injection. And I know nothing about the case except to guess that she might have had a horrific allergy to egg protein or something. You know, I don't know. When I see those stories, though, I want to respond with, yeah, well, what about the millions of people who, and it is millions, who have gotten this injection and have not, you know, died from some severe reaction? So I don't know. You know, you just take your chance. I mean, that's all. I don't think we, I don't think we have to get into all sorts of weird conspiracy theories here. I think each individual has a choice to make. Do you take the shot or do you not? You know, do you get the vaccine or do you not? I would hope that people would base their decision as to whether or not to get vaccinated, either through the live virus in the nose or the dead virus in the arm. You know, I would hope people would make that decision not based on wild-eyed craziness. I mean, if you honestly believe that your life is at risk from getting the vaccine, well, then, of course, don't take it. But what are you basing that belief on? If you honestly believe that If you don't get vaccinated, you are going to die from the flu. Well, what are you basing that belief on? I mean, every medical expert out there keeps saying that it is relatively mild. I have a daughter who's 42 and a grandson who's 7 who both had it 2 weeks ago. They don't live here, but they both contracted swine flu. It was diagnosed as H1N1, I should say. And they both, my 7-year-old, or how old is Jake? 9. My 9-year-old grandson handled it like you would expect a kid to handle the flu. My 42-year-old daughter had a little bit more problem with it. But both of them survived I think all they took was symptomatic medicine. They didn't take anything for it, did they? No, it was too late to take Tamiflu. So my daughter was freaked out. I mean, when she first got it, you know, she called me, emailed me, Daddy, you know, but her doctor calmed her down and said, look, you know, this is, yeah, you've got it. But I just wish that there was not this crazy ass stuff about, you know, it's just like whether Obama is a resident, a citizen, you know. Christ, doesn't it ever stop, this stuff? Does it never stop? You know what I'm saying? With all the decisions that people have to make about whether or not to get vaccinated against something that is lethal in some instances, okay, if you're afraid of the booster that's, how do you say that word? Don't email me because adjuvant, whatever it's called. If you're worried about thimerosal or mercury or whatever your worries are, okay, why not balance that against, you know, as much medical information as you can get? I mean, real medical information, you know, not crazy crap off the web from any source, from conspiracy nutcases or from the pharmaceutical industrial industry. You know, there are websites that are run by people who care about public health and the physical well-being of you and your family. They're not out to steal your soul or incorporate you into some massive detention center because you've got, come on, folks, for Christ's sake, this is a disease. How did we get this crazed in this country? Man, I'm not trying to, make a big deal about something you might believe in. Okay, if you want to go that route, go that route. But ever since I talked about, you know, I'm going to make an effort to locate the virus, locate the vaccine. I don't think I'm going to get injected because, although I might, I just might do it just so Molly can see me get a shot too. I mean, but I've got a 5-year-old that I want to protect, and Kathy and I have made a decision. As soon as it's available, we'll do it. I don't know if Kathy's going to do it, but I will, and so will Molly. At first, I thought, nah, I'm not in that age group, and then I started thinking, well. So what? Come on, folks. And I realize there's a lot of science out there also that says that the vaccine this and the vaccine that. I know some of my listeners have sent me solid reports from people with the initials MD after their names. They are medical doctors. They're not, some kind of crazy people or who've decided to jump on the newest conspiracy bandwagon. So, you know, okay, there's arguments, I guess, on both sides of this whole issue, or all 6 sides, or 20 sides. I don't even know anymore. You know, I don't have any clarity about anything. Do you? Every time I think I know, okay, I've settled that, you know, then all of a sudden here comes 8 or 9 or 10 different other different circumstances that could be maybe possibly work in. And there goes my crystal clear ironclad decision, no matter what the issue is. So, Lord, it's just gotten crazy. So anyway, State of emergency, yes. You know, on the other hand, Prairie Two is right. A state of emergency does allow, you know, a national state of emergency does allow medical centers to do certain things they couldn't do without that declaration. So I don't know who asked for it. I don't know who's advising Obama. I don't know if Obama's daughters have gotten it. I don't know if Angela Merkel's ministers have gotten it. I have no idea. And you know what? Honestly, at this point, I don't care. I just don't care whether those individuals have gotten a vaccine or not. I truly don't care. Enough people have gotten this, the vaccine and the disease, to make it pretty clear to me anyway that, you know, you can go either way. You roll the dice in this one, I guess. But, you know, I'm not going to get a shot or not get a shot because of some crazed website someplace that says, if you get this shot, you're going to wind up in a detention center and with your legs falling off, you know, plus it will poison your DNA to the 20th generation. Yes, I'm exaggerating. I'm not trying to mock anybody. I'm just saying I'm tired of it. You ever get to that point where you just go, Jesus Christ, this is a disease. It's not a plot. You know, and I know that, what's his name? Rumsfeld had a great big interest, financial interest in the company that makes Tamiflu. I don't know if he still does anymore. You know, I got an email from somebody that's months ago who said, you know, how do you know? This is back in April when this thing first started showing up. How do you know this is not a plot to make Don Rumsfeld rich? Oh, for Christ's sake, come on. You know, there are easier ways to do that. Jeez. Come on, folks. I'm just asking for a little bit of, you know, you make your decision, I'll make mine. And this, everybody, chill just a little bit. This is not some, I don't know what it is. Okay, from Prairie 2, his missive for this evening, he writes, you know you're in trouble when your economy is so bad that McDonald's packs up and leaves, as they just did in Iceland. Iceland, that was until recently the darling of the Chicago School of Economics. That's a philosophy for anything goes if some rich guys want to do it. They were among the first, Iceland was, to have their banking system completely collapse, leaving the country with a debt so big that the country's entire gross domestic product could not keep up with the interest payments. This time last year, the island was within 30 days of running out of food since they couldn't import anything. And the still of the night was regularly interrupted by the explosion of burning SUVs. Today, Iceland is struggling to recreate a real economy again after the fairyland of international banking has evaporated. The McDonald's restaurants will stay open with a new name and with locally grown food on the menu. What, a commercial? I mean, a break? Ah, damn it. All right. We'll have part two of Prairie 2's missive when we come back. Stay with us.
Defining anger management. It's Mike Malone.
Ten before the hour. All right, back to Prairie 2's email for today. He's talking about how bad it is in Iceland. Because Iceland was the country of, I think, the only European country that just went completely with the Chicago School of Economics, where, you know, anything goes if some rich guys want to do it. And they were among the first to have their entire banking system completely collapse. Anyway, he goes on, Iceland has negotiated its debt from the banking scandal down to about $9 billion. This for a country of 320,000 people. The U.S. equivalent would be $9 trillion. Well, what are they whining about? That's much less than we owe. Of course, the American frog was brought to boil slowly. Iceland thought they were rich a little more than a year ago and now find themselves in the frying pan. Iceland doesn't have much of a real economy. Fishing doesn't have much future with the oceans dying, but they hope to be a shipping hub in a couple of years with unrestricted passage across the Arctic Ocean thanks to global warming. Oh, and so far, no rich guys have gone to prison for the massive fraud, and it doesn't really look like they will. They apparently imported our justice system as well as our Ponzi schemes. Our own debt economy continues to lurch along looking for brains to eat. The U.S. dollar spiked up unexpectedly, pushing down oil and gold, or maybe it was the other way around. It's hard to keep the market manipulation straight from the plain old-fashioned panic. Either way, this pushed the Dow Industrials further below 10,000 today. A stronger dollar means that all the stuff at Walmart will come from China more cheaply, at least until the dollar goes the way of the Icelandic krona. Prairie2.com. Prairienumeral2.com. Our debt economy continues to lurch along looking for brains to eat. That sounds like something Bob Alexander would write. I think I hooked these two guys up via email. I think they're trading words and phrases back and forth. Anyway, there's Prairie 2's story, and he's sticking to it for today. All right, might as well. A couple more emails here. When we come back after the break, the top of the hour, we'll get a little bit deeper into the program. This is from Chris. Wow, Mike, I just heard you read the letter from that very opinionated lady, the one that was mouthing off in the restaurant. Chris writes, I came to live in the Phoenix area nearly 20 years ago because I was invited by the wife of a fellow soldier. She wanted to know more about her husband's friends. I stayed with her parents. Well, that didn't end well. During a conversation about current affairs, her mother felt very comfortable expressing her extremely racist views to me. And I am not a melanin-challenged European-American. I was not prepared for her anti-Mexican and anti-Native American views. She simply was an ignorant woman. I had enough and challenged some of her views. Her daughter later informed me that I was not to contact her or any member of her family ever again. I did as she wished. I don't feel like I lost much, but I'm still stunned at the views that some people expect you to accept, and even more stunned when they get offended at being called on their own ignorance. Chris. Yeah, well, that's what we were talking about earlier. You know, the right-wingers or bigoted people or people who are in, their brains are encased in concrete. And if you can get into the concrete, you find vast open spaces where the right-wing talkers, the suicider and the drug addict and the bunny ranch visitor, where they can pump in anything they want to. It's vast spaces of dead air. And from Dino, north of Toronto, Mike, your discussion regarding your valiant but fruitless attempts to reason with right-wingers reminds me of what Mike Papantonio told Sam Cedar and Mark Maron on the Air America webcast program, Break Room Live, which, like other great programs in Air America, including yours, got canceled. He passed on a piece of wisdom from his years, Papantonio did, as a federal prosecutor, and it was simply this. You cannot reason with a psychopath. At a certain point, you have to walk away from the table and let the strong arm of the law come down. Or, in the case of right-wingers, let the world evolve in a positive manner as progressive people fight to clean up the mess left by neocons so they can see for themselves that government can work if we want it to work. As for the H1N1 virus, the scientists are telling us that the benefits far outweigh the risks. Once the shots come available, I will get my shot and the rest of my family will as well. Regards, Dino, north of Toronto. Yeah, well, that's kind of my attitude about the, about both. You know, I gave up long ago on trying to convince a right winger, and that's a pretty all encompassing term that I just used generically, of anything. Yeah, there's no point. Reason, logic, science, common sense. it just doesn't play inside those kinds of minds. And yeah, the H1N1 vaccine, that's my take exactly. The scientists are saying, like any injection, I mean, for God's sake, I never dispute the truth of, you know, you inject with a needle something into your system. There is a real element of risk, but the risk has been, quantified to a point, or qualified, I should, quantified to a point where it makes more sense in some instances to accept the risk. I think there's something about us Americans. And you know this to be true, and so do I. We want everything risk-free. Everything's got to be risk-free. If not, we'll sue the Christ out of whoever, you know, is responsible for it not being risk-free. Now, I'm not talking about just blatant disregard for public health. No. You know, people that, mining companies that refused to tell their asbestos workers that they were setting themselves up for early, painful, horrific death. Yeah, they should be taken out and shot, those people. But I'm talking about, you know, if you want to avoid the flu, there's all kinds of ways you can go. Getting a shot, not getting a shot, washing your hands, not washing your hands. Come on. But all of it carries risk. Every bit of it, right? Aye. All right. Back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Maloney. Seven past the hour. This is the Maloney program. And we do strongly urge you to go to MikeMaloney.com and become a podcast subscriber. It'll cost you $7.95 a month or $59.40 a year. If you take a yearly subscription, it means each one of these downloads will cost you a quarter. There is a, in Chicago, for today and the next couple of days, banking industry group is meeting there and, defending the practices that got us all into trouble. Outside are protesters who are rallying against continuation of the abuses that just seem to be the abuses are just gathering steam, going to do it all over again. The American Bankers Association are the thugs. They've gotten together for their annual convention, and they said the protests outside were misplaced because it is largely community bankers that are attending. Oh, so I guess those community bankers had nothing whatsoever to do with the financial crisis that was created and ginned up by the banking industry. Of course not. The president of the American Bankers Association said during his opening remarks to the crowd of bankers, quote, "You did not make any abusive subprime loans. You did not take big bonuses for products that later blew up." End quote. Oh, well, okay. Anyway, the Service Employees International Union, major labor group, estimated that up to 5,000 people from different organizations will join the protests over the next couple of days. It's at the Sheraton Chicago Hotel and Towers. I think that's downtown, downtown Chicago. The communications director for the Chicago nonprofit group National People's Coalition said the American Bankers Association was an appropriate target because the group lobbies against regulatory reforms that would help consumers but hurt the big banks' profits. Of course, you know, for the head of the ABA, Edward Yingling, to get up there and whine and bitch and moan about, you didn't take any subprime loans, you didn't, you know, oh, come on, for God's sake. It's like all of the stuff that the right wing does to us exists in a vacuum. No, it's all interconnected. And as Andrea Fry, the communications director for National People's Coalition, points out, the ABA lobbies against the kinds of reforms that would stop this, but it's never going to happen. We are too far into the corporatist state. Andrea said, quote, the ABA, they're standing in the way of by spending billions of dollars to fight meaningful rules, end quote. And then the way it's reported by the Reuters news agency, the ABA held security tight at its conference, checking badges with an ultraviolet light to ensure that the meetings proceeded uninterrupted. Mr. Yingling, addressing the attendees, said the protest was misdirected. Blah, 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 blah. Oh, man. Anyway, so if you live in Chicago and you want to have some fun over the next couple of days, go to the Sheraton Chicago Hotel and Towers. It's probably down near the Loop, downtown, and join the protest. Or not. More than likely not. I understand. Thursday coming, this Thursday, day after the day after tomorrow, is National Strike Day. National Strike Day. That's the day that you are supposed to do nothing. If you have a robot that can do it in your place, that will suffice. I have a robot. It's called a Simeon. It's a computer program, and it will provide the feed of one of our programs to XM and Sirius and our affiliates and the Internet, whereas I will join the strike. One day of doing nothing. You could call in sick. Say you have the H1N1. Kay, who normally is our education correspondent, she had something here that is a good segue into the five myths about healthcare around the world. But Kay wrote, Mike, last night the 60 Minutes broadcast led with a piece entitled Medicare Fraud, a $60 billion crime. This segment aired on the last day of the week, during which congressional Democrats began labeling the public option Medicare E for everybody. You know, Medicare E for everybody. Coincidence? Kay writes, I have no idea how far in advance 60 Minutes plans its broadcast, but this seems awfully convenient. I'm not about to deny that there's fraud in the Medicare system. But what about the criminality of the private health insurance industry? How many billions of dollars and how many lives does that total? What about the fraud that has been committed by the likes of Halliburton, Blackwater, et al. Over the past 8 years? How about the billions of dollars that went missing in Iraq? How much has that cost taxpayers? I can just hear the AM radio chorus today. See, Rush is right. The government can't do anything. They can't run Medicare, and now they want to force everybody to sign up for it. That's goddamn socialism! But on the issue of billions of their tax dollars continuing to be pumped into Iraq and Afghanistan, crickets. Silence. On the subject of how those tax dollars are used to compensate filthy mercenaries making fortunes from death and destruction, not a word. So, as always, the oligarchy has everything and everyone exactly as it wants. Okay. As a matter of fact, 60 Minutes does, unless it's a breaking story, they do plan fairly well in advance. But, yeah, are these things coincidental? Medicare fraud, a $60 billion crime. I didn't see it. yesterday. We were still up in the, further up into the mountains and here in Georgia. But, and as Kay writes, yeah, there's lots of fraud in the Medicare system. But it's not perpetrated by the recipient of Medicare. It's not some little old lady who says, well, I think I'll fake leukemia so I can get money. It's not some old man who says, well, I'm going to jam this ice pick into my liver so I can go get or my kidney so I can go get dialysis. The fraud is perpetrated by the corporations who collect billions of illegal dollars illegally from the government. So sure, there's fraud, but it's not. How in the hell could the recipients be doing it? What, somebody 86 is sitting around going, well, let me see now. How can I screw these sons of bitches? Let me figure out a way here. I know. I'll take a hammer to my foot. Oh, God. Oh, now I want to get me one of those little rascal, those little wheel thing. Oh, God damn, my foot hurts. Oh, I broke it. Help. You know, that's madness. That's madness. Jesus, God. Of course there's Medicare fraud, right-wingers? Guess who perpetrates it? Five myths about real, or about healthcare around the world. Al Babe sent this to me. It's this guy, T.R. Reid. This was in the Washington Post. He's a former writer for the Post, and he's author of a book called The Healing of America, A Global Quest for Better, Cheaper, and Fairer Healthcare. Is that the guy that traveled all around looking for someone to fix his back? I'm not sure what it was. But anyway, to condense this, because I think this is interesting. The first one is it's all socialized medicine out there, you know, in the countries that have universal healthcare. We'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Cleaning up America one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, a couple of quick emails here have to do with the two things you were just talking about. Mark in Reno, regarding the banks, he said, Mike, there are actually community banks that did not make any subprime loans. They are the smaller banks that make loans the old-fashioned way with fiduciary responsibility. They are doing just fine financially. However, they are now getting nailed from the economy and all the unemployment. They have many foreclosures because people now cannot pay on the normally secure loans. Yeah, and I don't disagree with that. I think the point is that the American Banking Association, as the spokeswoman for one of the protest groups in Chicago pointed out, the American Bankers Association, to which a lot of these small community banks belong, or at least their executives do, they lobby against legislation that would have stopped the bigger banks. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not disagreeing, Mark, that they're not banks, you know, the credit unions caught a bunch of flack too. I've dealt with the same credit union for 25 years, and I think it's great. I know there are credit unions who also got scammy, but anyway, thanks, Mark. And then Reg writes in regarding the 60 Minutes program and Medicare fraud. Reg writes, the program was not designed to discredit Medicare. It showed how criminals in Florida and other states are fraudulently billing Medicare for hundreds of millions of dollars. The program tried to show how easy it was to get money out of the system, which is required to pay bills to doctors and medical supply houses within a very short time, that requirement by law. It was more an indictment of law enforcement, as very little has been done to go after these criminals until very recently. And where'd it go? Michael emailed me, and he said, anyone who thinks that the recipients are scamming Medicare need only Google one name. Just Google Rick Scott, S-C-O-T-T. I did during the break, and one of the first ones that pops up is Wikipedia, Rick Scott. Just check out Rick Scott and the Bill Frist family, all right? All right, now, regarding healthcare around the world, the so-called socialized medicine countries, right? The single payer, the universal, whatever you want to call it, and those are all different categories, of course. The lie that it's all socialized medicine out there, as T.R. Reid writes, not so. Some countries like Britain, New Zealand, and Cuba do provide health care in government hospitals with the government paying the bills. Others, for instance, Canada and Taiwan, rely on private sector providers paid for by government-run insurance. But many wealthy countries, including Germany, the Netherlands, Japan, and Switzerland, provide universal coverage using private doctors, private hospitals, and private insurance plans. In some ways, T.R. Reid writes, healthcare is less socialized overseas than in the United States. Almost all Americans sign up for government insurance, Medicare, at age 65. In Germany, Switzerland, and the Netherlands, seniors stick with private insurance plans for life. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs is one of the planet's purest examples of government-run healthcare. Right. That's the VA in this country is single payer. And Medicare is, the so-called public option, or whatever you want to call it. Number two, overseas care is rationed through limited choices or long lines. How often have you heard that, right? The answer, generally, no. Germans can sign up for any of the nation's 200 private health insurance plans, which is a broader choice than any American has. If a German doesn't like her insurance company, she can switch to another, with no increase in premium. The Swiss, too, can choose any insurance plan in the country. In France and Japan, you don't get a choice of insurance provider. You have to use the one designated for your company or your industry. But patients can go to any doctor, any hospital, any traditional healer. Yeah. There are no U.S.-style limits, such as in-network list of doctors or pre-authorization for surgery. You pick any doctor, you get treatment, and insurance has to pay. Canadians have their choice of providers. In Austria and Germany, if a doctor diagnoses a person as stressed, medical insurance pays for weekends at a health spa. Oh, my God. As for those notorious waiting lists, some countries are indeed plagued by them. Canada makes patients wait weeks or months for non-emergency care as a way to keep costs down. But studies by the Commonwealth Fund and others report that many nations, Germany, Britain, Austria, outperform the U.S. on measures such as waiting times for appointments and for elective surgeries. In Japan, waiting times are so short that most patients don't bother to make an appointment. One Thursday morning in Tokyo, I called the prestigious orthopedic clinic at Keio University Hospital to schedule a consultation about my aching shoulder. The receptionist said, why don't you just drop by? That same afternoon, I was in the surgeon's office. Dr. Nakamichi recommended an operation. When could we do it? I asked. The doctor checked his computer and said, tomorrow would be pretty difficult. Perhaps someday next week? That's two. We've got three more. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Everybody's
is your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
All right, T.R. Reid, writing this past, was it this past Sunday or was it, it doesn't matter. It was in the Washington Post. And I guess it was a week ago. And he was writing about five myths about healthcare around the world. The first one, all socialized medicine. It's all socialized medicine out there, which is not true. Care is rationed through limited choices or long lines. Not true. The next one is foreign healthcare systems are inefficient, bloated bureaucracies. These are all the lies that the health industrial industry is trying to put out, and its shills in talk radio, right-wing talk radio, are putting out for all of us to get confused. Foreign healthcare systems are inefficient, bloated bureaucracies. T.R. Reid's answer, much less so than here. It may seem to Americans that the U.S.-style free enterprise, private sector, for-profit health insurance is naturally the most cost-effective way to pay for health care. But in fact, all the other payment systems are more efficient than ours. U.S. health insurance companies have the highest administrative costs in the world. They spend roughly 20 cents of every dollar for non-medical costs, such as paperwork, reviewing claims, and marketing. France's health insurance industry, in contrast, covers everybody and spends about 4%. Canada's universal insurance system, run by government bureaucrats, spends 6%. In Taiwan, a leaner version of the Canadian model has administrative costs of 1.5%. One year, this figure ballooned to 2%, and the opposition parties savaged the government for wasting money. The world champion at controlling medical costs is Japan, even though its aging population is a profligate consumer of medical care. On average, the Japanese go to the doctor 15 times a year, three times the U.S. rate. They have twice as many MR scans and x-rays. Quality is high. Life expectancy and recovery rates for major diseases are better in the U.S. Than in the U.S., and yet Japan spends about $3,400 per person annually on health care. The United States spends more than $7,000. The fourth myth, cost controls stifle innovation. False. The United States is home to groundbreaking medical research, but so are other countries with much lower cost structures. Any American who's had a hip or knee replacement is standing on French innovation. Deep brain stimulation to treat depression is a Canadian breakthrough. Many of the wonder drugs promoted endlessly on American television, including Viagra, come from British, Swiss, or Japanese labs. Overseas, strict cost controls actually drive innovation. In the United States, an MRI scan of the neck region costs about $1,500. In Japan, the identical scan, $98. Under the pressure of cost controls, Japanese researchers found ways to perform the same diagnostic technique for 1/15th the American price. And the Japanese labs still make a profit. Oy. Oh, my God. And the last one, health insurance has to be cruel. Not really. American health insurance companies routinely reject applicants with a so-called pre-existing condition, precisely the people most likely to need health insurance. They employ armies of adjusters to deny claims. If a customer is hit by a truck and faces big medical bills, the insurance rescission department digs through the records looking for grounds to cancel the policy, often while the victim is still in the hospital. The companies say they have to do this stuff to survive in a tough business. Foreign health insurance companies, in contrast, must accept all applicants, and they can't cancel as long as you pay your premiums. The plans are required to pay any claim submitted by a doctor or hospital or health spa, usually within tight time limits. The big Swiss insurer, Groupe Mutuel, promises to pay all claims within 5 days. The group's chief executive told me, quote, our customers love it, end quote. The corollary is that everyone is mandated to buy insurance to give the plans an adequate pool of ratepayers. This is why an opt-out program is not a good idea for public option. The key difference is that foreign health insurance plans exist only to pay people's medical bills, not to make a profit. The United States is the only developed country that lets insurance companies profit from basic health coverage. And it goes on and on. I'm just nonplussed. I'm perplexed. I'm flummoxed. I'm speechless. I'm stuttering. I'm repeating myself. I'm saying I'm over and over again, which is a clear indication I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. And that's because I'm lost here. An attempt was made to provide health insurance for everybody and to do it efficiently and to do it with a public option. Now, let me preface all this by saying I'm completely against I think the best plan for the United States is single payer. I'm against other forms in a perfect world where single payer was being promoted. Single payer is not being promoted. This is a first step if the public option is included to single payer, I think. So I'm not completely against it. I'm just concerned that single payer was taken off the table before it was even on the table. Kind of like the impeachment of Bush, you know, these damn Democrats. Oh, well, an attempt was made to bring health insurance reform to this country. And what did the Republicans provide for that debate? Death panels. They're going to kill children born with genetic conditions like Down syndrome. They're going to kill the old ladies. They're going to ask soldiers and sailors to commit suicide rather than the goddamn Republicans have injected nothing into this national debate but lies, fear, putrid ratings boosters for swine like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and the pig man. Nothing has been put out there by Republicans in media or in Congress to advance the discussion one degree. What they have done, the Republicans and their cohorts, is simply muddy the issues, inject all kinds of lies, deceptive stories, outright fraud, trying to, with their goddamn tea bags and their, it's just astonishing to me. And that people wonder why nobody believes anything that the Republican Party has to say anymore. Except, of course, you know, the hollow heads. But there it is. An attempt was made, is being made. And something is going to happen. There will be health care reform. I am hoping, health insurance reform, I am hoping that the public option plan will be an opt-in program. You know, given the madness we have to deal with, and I'll tell you why. And somebody else wrote this or something today. I don't know. Somebody sent it to me or I had this idea and then I read it and I thought, okay, great minds, yada, yada. kidding. The opt-in program, which will give the states, in other words, the Obama administration will present a public option program for people to buy insurance from the government. And the states will be given a choice to opt in or not. You know, you can allow the governors of the states, the legislatures of the states, whatever it take, executive order, legislative order, whatever. The states will decide whether or not they want to be in this public option plan. In other words, it'll be available. Not that they have to take it, but it'll be available in their state. I am hoping that the Republican state, the states run by Republican governors, the states that are controlled by these right-wing crazy people, the legislatures that are Republican, all of these various states that have this say no. We don't want it. Meanwhile, the so-called blue states say yes, we'll take it. By the time the next, the 2012 election cycle comes along, I think the difference in health care provided to Americans will be so stunning. It will be a knife into the goddamn heart of the Republican Party, because people in the red states will say, well, why weren't we included? And the answer will be as simple as you can make it. It'll have to be simple for these right-wing bastards, these Republicans, these conservatives. The answer will be because your governor and your legislature did not want you to have it. And the reason they did not want you to have it was because they're owned by the health insurance industrial industry, or health insurance industry. So I hope the opt-in is part of the, you know, like I say, given the fact that it's all this craziness is going on by Blue Dog Democrats and Republicans and the rest of these swine who don't understand this is health insurance. That's all. This is not a trip to Mars. It's goddamn health insurance. So, okay, let's have the public option as a means of driving down cost. And whether it drives down cost or not, really, at this point, is beside the point. Because I have a feeling that millions of people will choose to, and not just the presently, or the currently, I should say, uninsured, that millions of people will adopt or go for the public option. And all of a sudden, the people that have been struggling without health insurance will have it. Unless they live in a state that is run by madmen and crazy women, in which case they won't have it. And I think the contrast will do the job.
Here it is. Back to Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. A little more on this health insurance reform effort. Because one way or another, it's going to affect every single American. I hope tonight to get to the disaster that is Afghanistan and Iraq. These bombings in Iraq today, almost 200 people killed in suicide bombings? Jesus Christ. 14 Americans die in helicopter crashes in Afghanistan. It's just one madness-inducing topic at a time. Regarding health insurance, if you did Google or Wikipedia Rick Scott, you know who he was, the head of the Hospital Corporation of America. Jamie writes, hey, Mike, I've asked this question of many in the media with never an answer. Why isn't Rick Scott, who was at the head of HCA when the company executives were fined $1.7 billion for defrauding Medicare and Medicaid? This piece of human waste not only couldn't get any jail time, but has been out in the forefront leading the fight against medical insurance and healthcare reform. I don't have any words to express how angry I am at how absolutely effed up our system is. I scream, but so few seem to hear. Yeah, he has that company called, what is it called? Don't email me. I got it here. What is it? Conservatives for Patients' Rights. That's right. Conservatives for Patients' Rights. You know, once again, the absolute corruption of language, which is all Republicans or conservatives can do. Peter in Vermont writes, the benefits of single payer. Here's an example. The VA was the first to pick up the fact that Vioxx, remember that? That was a painkiller, wasn't it? Vioxx was killing people. All VA hospitals are on one medical software program and on one overarching computer system. Hence, the VA was the first to notice that a side effect of Vioxx was a high likelihood of a fatal heart attack, as had been demonstrated among its own patients. Opt-out healthcare states will go Democratic so fast it will make one's head spin. Peter in Vermont. Have I got it backwards about opt-out, opt-in? I don't even know. Prairie 2 says if the opt-in idea would work, then the red states wouldn't have all the other stuff, all the other self-inflicted problems that they wallow in. With the opt-out, everybody gets a taste of it, and any idiot that tries to do away with it will be drummed out of office. That is assuming it's set up so they can't screw it up. I guess opt-out is the better of the two. I don't know. Somebody will explain it to me real quick in three or four short sentences. And I have a pretty good idea who will give me the explanation. Because I probably have it bass-ackwards here. Cat Mary in Memphis. Pharmaceutical corporatists are the main source of Medicare and Medicaid fraud. Other notables are insurance and hospital executives who defrauded Medicare and other federally funded health care programs. And she writes, no, Rick Scott, who was CEO of HCA during the 1990s when the company was engaged in massive fraud, is president of Conservatives for Patients' Rights, a group currently running ads against health care reform. Let me pause a second here. Yeah, see, how can that be? Just like Peter in Vermont says, how can that be? Well, that's the magic of a corporation, you see. The corporation was fined $1.7 billion, or was it executives? I don't know. But why is this son of a bitch allowed to walk free? You know what would happen to him in China? Yeah, you're right. His organs would now be for sale all over the internet. It would have been very quick and very, you know, painless. Cat Mary goes on, the Health and Human Services Department Inspector General reported in 2009 that 80% of the insurance companies participating in Medicare Part D, that's the prescription drug benefit, have overcharged subscribers and taxpayers, totaling an estimated $4.4 billion. Typical estimates of the level of Medicare and Medicaid fraud are around $60 billion. The five largest pharmaceutical companies all have a history of fraud. Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, Hoffman LaRoche, and Sanofi Aventis. Pfizer. In 2009, a jury found that Pfizer owed Wisconsin $9 million for violating Wisconsin's medical fraud law more than 1.4 million times by purposely overcharging the state for prescription drugs. Pfizer now faces potential fines between $140 million and $21 billion? Is that right? There were similar incidents in 2004 and 2002. In 2008, Johnson & Johnson was charged in Texas with funneling kickbacks to Texas health officials and distributing false marketing materials to get Risperdal, its schizophrenia drug, on the state's Medicaid preferred list. The charges are still pending. Texas has spent millions of state Medicaid dollars on the drug, which some recent studies show performs no better than much cheaper generics and can lead to diabetes and excessive weight gain, particularly in children. 3. GlaxoSmithKline. In 2006, GSK agreed to pay $14 million to settle allegations that it engaged in patent fraud, antitrust violations, and frivolous litigation to maintain a monopoly and block generic versions of its antidepressant Paxil from entering the market. In 2003, GSK paid $88 million in a civil fine for overcharging Medicaid for its antidepressant Paxil and its nasal allergy spray Flonase. In 2007, the Senate Finance Committee reported an orchestrated plan, quote, by GSK to, quote, stifle the opinion of Dr. John Buse, a professor of medicine at the University of North Carolina, who specializes in diabetes, end quote. GlaxoSmithKline intimidated Dr. Buse in order to prevent him from suggesting that a drug manufactured by GSK, Avandia, carried cardiovascular risks. There's two more here when we come back. But yeah, that's where the fraud is. That's where the fraud is. See, and this is what these rat bastards in right-wing media don't tell you. Of course Medicare is riddled with fraud. But it's not fraud committed by the recipients. It's these goddamn filthy corporations once again. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Program. We're talking a little bit here about Medicare and Medicaid fraud, and Cap Miriam Ephes has sent me this list of the 5 biggest or most egregious robbers, all corporations: Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, GlaxoSmithKline, Hoffman LaRoche, and Sanofi Aventis. And as she points out, pharmaceutical corporations are the main source of Medicare and Medicaid fraud. Other notables are insurance and hospital executives who defraud Medicare and Medicaid and other federally funded health care programs. It just goes on and on. I mean, do any of these goddamn teabaggers or death panel freaks tell this to their brain dead, empty headed, slobbering idiots who show up for these rallies put together by the suicider and the pill popper and the whorehouse visitor? No offense to the sex workers, of course. Do they? No, they don't. And these gaggles of idiots that get together, yeah, I don't want any health care. God damn, just keep your hands off, keep the government out of Medicare. just morons. You think Glenn Beck or the pig man would ever tell their sick audiences that real health care fraud is perpetrated by corporate America? Of course not. Anyway, GlaxoSmithKline, millions of dollars to settle allegations that engage in patent fraud. Johnson & Johnson, kickbacks. Pfizer, violating Wisconsin's medical fraud law. All right, now we go to Hoffman LaRoche. In 1999, that company agreed to plead guilty and pay $500 million criminal fine for leading a worldwide conspiracy to raise and fix prices and allocate market shares for certain vitamins. Jesus. Sanofi Aventis in 2009, that company, wholly owned subsidiary of Sanofi Aventis, the pharmaceutical line, acknowledged that it violated the False Claims Act by misreporting drug prices for patients in the Medicaid drug rebate program. They paid $95 million to settle the charges. In 2007, a special agent at the FDA's Criminal Investigation Office testified before the House Energy and Commerce Investigation Subcommittee that Sanofi Aventis had evidence that a safety study of its antibiotic Ketek contained fake data, but submitted it to the FDA anyway. And it just goes on and on. It's corporate America that is just punishing the people in this country. Corporate America, where it concerns the weapons industry. Corporate America, where it concerns the private contractors that go to our manufactured wars. Corporate America, that is supposed to be in charge of medicine for sick people, whether they're poor or old or both. Corporate America, where it concerns people getting loans or for a house. Corporate America, where it concerns people being charged a fair interest rate on their credit cards. Every goddamn place you turn, I defy any of you right-wing booger eaters out there to show me one example. Just, well, what about Acorn? Get out of here. One example where corporate America has not, in instances of massive fraud, where it was not a corporation behind it. And you dumbasses, you Republicans, you right-wing freaks who sit there and eat up all of this garbage, the swill that right-wing radio and television pumps into your mouths. You just sit there like these geese that provide pate. You sit there with your necks back and this huge funnel just churning stuff down your throat, until your liver gets swollen and diseased. Ugh. I don't eat innards. Okay, it's opt-out is the good one. Prairie 2 writes, Harry Reid is pushing an opt-out plan where all states would be in for at least a year, and then would have to justify to the voters why they are taking away their insurance plan. Opt-in would be a variation on the trigger plan that, oddly, Obama seems to back, and we require each state to create their own plan. Okay, so I think opt-out is the one I would favor. And Reggie writes, opt-out is what they plan to include in the bill. Individual states can choose not to be in the public program, which means that if their legislature or governor and it's not yet decided who will make the decision, does not specifically opt out of the program, the people of every state will be in the public option. Individual states do not have to opt in to the program to be covered. All right, well, then I guess opt out is the one that I would favor, because everyone, it starts out where every state is in the public option, and then the governors and the legislatures, if they decide to pull out, would have to explain to their constituents why they're going to lose their insurance. On the other hand, the opt-in, like I said, the opt-in would be, I don't know about the trigger thing. Trigger thing makes me too nervous. It reminds me of the NRA. But the opt-in plan would be the public options available. Who wants it? Well, obviously, the blue state, so-called, would probably go for it. I can see states like Pennsylvania and Michigan and Indiana, states that have just been hammered with this created financial crisis in this country, created by the financial services industry. I can see those states opting in because of the desperate need for health insurance, and then having Republicans try to run and get elected, since all three of those states went for Obama last time, and trying to convince people to give up their public option. Oh yeah, that'll work. Dumbasses. So I guess either way has its advantages, right? Now, the Reuters news agency has a health and science editor, Maggie Fox. And she writes that the U.S. healthcare system is just as wasteful as Obama says it is. And proposed reforms could be paid for by fixing some of the most obvious inefficiencies, preventing mistakes, and fighting fraud, according to a report released on Monday. The report says the U.S. healthcare system wastes between $500 and $850 billion every year. That's a report from Robert Kelly, Vice President of Healthcare Analytics at Thomson Reuters agency or company or whatever. The report reads, quote, America's healthcare system is indeed hemorrhaging billions of dollars, and the opportunity to slow the fiscal bleeding are substantial. The bad news is that an estimated $700 billion is wasted annually. That's one-third of the nation's health care bill. The good news is that by attacking waste, we can reduce health care costs without adversely affecting the quality of care or access to care. Some of the other findings in the report, and this report was put together by Thomson Reuters, which is the parent company of Reuters News Agency. Here's a couple other findings. Unnecessary care, such as the overuse of antibiotics and lab tests to protect against malpractice exposure makes up 37% of healthcare waste, or $200 to $300 billion a year. Fraud makes up 22% of healthcare waste, or up to $200 billion a year in fraudulent Medicare claims, kickbacks, or referrals for unnecessary services and other scams. Administrative inefficiency and redundant paperwork accounts for 18% of healthcare waste. Medical mistakes account for $50 billion to $100 billion in unnecessary spending each year, or 11% of the total. Preventable conditions such as uncontrolled diabetes cost $30 to $50 billion a year. Oh, my God. Well, healthcare system wastes up to $800 billion a year. In 10 years, that's $8 trillion. What is the estimated cost of healthcare reform? Isn't it around $7 trillion? Oh, golly gee, goodness. You mean the entire thing could be paid for if the waste were wrung out of and the fraud, especially the fraud? We all know that in a capitalist system, there will always be fraud until there is the death penalty for fraud. or 20 years in prison, no ifs, ands, or buts. Look what they did to Bernie Madoff. What did he do? He ripped off a bunch of rich people and a bunch of rich foundations and a couple that weren't so rich. So he goes to prison for the rest of his life. What about this freak that ran Hospital Corporation of America? How much time did he serve? Crickets. Gasoline.
ExxonMobil is barely getting by. with millions in profits, it's just another lie. Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state? Hey, don't it make you red state blue?
He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
I told him once or twice to quit playing cards and shooting dice. He's in the jailhouse now.
Well, I had a friend named 21 past the hour. I guess it helps to, it certainly does help me to get a little bit clearer on this madness out here, about healthcare reform, health insurance reform. So much attention was focused by our friends in mainstream media, the rat bastards, all summer, all spring. I mean, it hasn't ended. Think of all the television time that went to cover these asses at the teabagger, bowls. The crazy people showing up frothing and screaming at these congressional meetings back in the home district. There were people there, of course, who wanted real information, but all of it disrupted. And it's clear. I mean, we're talking billions upon billions upon billions. We're talking trillions of dollars at stake here. By at stake, I mean these filthy, predatory corporations see that they're going to lose the death grip that they have on this particular industry. They have a death grip on the financial services, banking, investment, so-called industry. They have a death grip on the weapons industry. They have a death grip pick an area of capitalism in this country. Go ahead. That's not an empty challenge. Tell me an area of capitalism that is not in the bony death grip hands. I mean, the food industry. There's another example. Prepared food, the phony food industry. How many cases of heart disease and diabetes and all these degenerative diseases are caused by the kind of food that's in the goddamn grocery stores? It never stops, does it? Remember the, Firestone, Bridgestone tires that were disintegrating and killing people? Remember all that?
Oh, and they knew about it.
Is there an example? Will somebody please send me an example of established corporate America that is willing to accept, you know, a capitalist organization that is willing to accept a nominal profit, enough profit to stay in business, pay the shareholders, make some money for the home office, and do good by the American public? Go ahead. Send me one. Just the name of one company. I don't mean mom and pop pie company in East Salem, Arkansas. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about corporate America. Look at the chemical industry. Jesus Christ, will you look at the chemical? Look at Dow Chemical. What's the big firms that are genetically... Archer Daniels Midland, all these, Monsanto, go ahead. How about a mining company? How about a coal company? How about an oil company? Hello? Anybody out there? Just one. They don't exist. That's the part that really upsets me as an American who bought the myth, who bought the story, who really did believe at one time that, you know, our soldiers went and fought and died for the flag and apple pie and mother, freedom, democracy. What a filthy lie that was. or that the great industrial engine that was driving America was such a wonderful thing. What a filthy lie that was. Or that when we did have to go to war in, oh, I don't know, Central America, or overthrow governments in South America or the Middle East, or send troops to the Far East, it was to protect, American interests. And what were American interests? Well, mom, the flag, and apple pie. Has anything not been a lie? This is what's driving me crazy. You know, I'm at a stage in my life where, you know, it's like review time. And if you haven't gotten to that point yet, trust me, you will. You know, if you live long enough, you'll get to the point where if you still have a working mind, an analytical mind to even the slightest degree, at some point, and it's usually later rather than sooner, you start to examine, you start to analyze all the things you've learned, all the stuff you were taught. You take inventory. What have I accumulated? How much of it is garbage? How much of it is real? What have I learned? And I'm in that process now, have been for probably the past 5 or 6 years. And I look at, you know, all the stuff, everything. I look at everything I've accumulated inside my head. How much of it was just filthy lies? How much of it was to further corporate America? How much of it really related, all these things I was taught, really related to my well-being as an individual, as an American, as part of the larger fabric, the village rather than the individual living out in a cave somewhere? What, when, how, where, what did I learn made any sense, was real, was honest, was decent? You going through that too, maybe?
There's a spirit of achievement all around.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Celeste is in Fremont, Ohio. Hi, Celeste.
Hi, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
All right. All I could think of for any corporate thing that was human-friendly was Costco.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what the Wall Street Journal said. They were not doing it right. They shouldn't be paying their people the amount of money they were paying.
Oh, God forbid.
And I heard today that George W. Bush is going to be traveling the country giving inspirational speeches. About what?
I saw the tail end of a report about that, and I just about lost my supper. George Bush doing motivational speaking is just madness. I mean, I guess it means he's unemployable, so there's no oil company that wants him, so he's got to get out and do that. I don't know what to think, Celeste. As far as Costco is concerned, yeah, that's great, and they are a huge retailer, but, you know, I'm talking about, something on a grander scale, a bigger scale than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's the only one I could think of. And
right, yeah, that's the only.
I can't think of any company anymore.
I can't either, or any industry that is truly the kind of capitalist industry that I've been talking about in this program for years. If they are truly a predatory capitalist industry, which seems like most of them in this country are, then my question is impossible to answer, because there are none. There couldn't be one that really has the interests of its workers and its consumers and the environment at heart. It's just impossible. They're all out to exploit, to get, to rip, to steal, to defraud as much as they can before they're caught. And then when they're caught, to say, well, you know, that's why we have insurance. That's why we have a corporate board. That's why, you know, so that responsibility is diffused to the point where there is no responsibility. So, yeah, the corporation will pay a fine. Okay. Oh, thank you. Goodbye. We'll do it again. It's madness, Celeste.
It is. Well, wasn't it Pfizer that paid the $2 billion-plus fine for falsely marketing one of their magic drugs?
I wouldn't be surprised. Whatever Cat Mary just sent me that from Memphis that I read a couple of minutes ago, it's hard for me to keep track of that stuff. And the main reason is because when I start reading that, start doing that kind of research, I just find myself starting to choke. I get so angry and I just figure, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm not going to sit here and have a stroke because of these bastards. You know what I'm saying?
Not worth it.
Not worth it at all. How's everything in Fremont? Oh my God. I've spent so much time in Fremont.
Stinking with cabbage. They're harvesting cabbage, and you know what that smells like.
Oh, God, do I ever. You know, I've said before, I grew up in Toledo. So Fremont was just a hop, skip, and Route 20, I think, out of Toledo.
Yeah, the sauerkraut capital of the United States.
That's true. Oh, my God. Oh, the smell, it's just like skunks. It's worse than skunks.
I know, because skunk goes away after a few days.
That's true. Well, have a good time in Fremont. I kind of miss Fremont. I really do. I know a lot of people don't believe that, but it was just such a nice, pleasant little country town at one time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, it's all pretty nice little country teabag town now.
I hear you. I know. It all went right wing. Hey, Celeste, good to hear from you. Call again, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, take care. Good night. Cabbage. That's right. Cabbage harvest is coming in. I mean, real good skunk. When you smell, sometimes, you know, you're driving down, especially here in Georgia, in the summer, you're driving down, somebody hit a skunk and it smells like, oh my God, somebody's doing really good reefer. But cabbage is different. It's got a very foul. Ron is in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Good to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
When are you coming back to Raleigh? I know you went to school here.
Well, I didn't graduate. I went to school there. Went to NC State. But it's been a long time. I haven't been to Raleigh except to pass through in a long time. I'd love to come back there. You know, we did this thing the other night about the number one area, the top 20 or 30 areas in the country based on the quality of life and education and so on and so on. You know, the Golden Triangle, the Research Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill was number one.
Yep.
Number one.
It's a nice place, except it's getting too big.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Anyway, I wanted to give you some hope, Mike.
All right.
There is a large corporation that actually is trying to do the right thing. It's called Interface, Inc. They are one of the largest carpet companies in the world.
Really? Interface?
Mm-hmm. It's run by a guy named Ray C. Anderson, who split off from Milken in 1973 to start his own carpet company.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that brought about carpet tiles for corporations, you know, those big square tiles.
Right, right.
And he realized a few years ago that he had, you know, carpet manufacturing had such an impact on the environment that he wanted to go to a zero-impact corporation, and they're striving towards doing that.
I'll be darned.
So there is at least one.
Do they pay their people decently?
Absolutely.
Do they?
They had growth over the last couple of years, and he says, you know, it's about respect for the people that work for him. He started his company with like 15 people.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're one of the largest in the world.
Well, that is, I'm glad you told me about that because, you know, just to hear the name of a company that's doing a good thing, Interface or
Interface Inc.
I-N-T-E-R face?
I-N-T-E-R.
Interface Inc. I'll
check him out, Ray Anderson. I mean, he's done some speeches. You might be able to find something he's done online, but he says he wants to build a company and it's growing.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to make sure that he doesn't go back into the environment to anything. He wants to you can recycle the carpets after they've worn out back to the company and they reuse them.
Huh. Well, that sounds good. All right, Ron, thanks.
All right, then.
All right, man.
Have a good night.
All right, I appreciate it. Thanks. Well, that's two. That's two. Almost hate. We're almost out of out of time for this evening. Well, we got about 20 minutes left, but this report today, 14 Americans killed in Afghanistan today, two crashes involving helicopters, one of the deadliest days in America's 8-year war in that country. American military officials say that neither crash involved hostile fire. Well, they have to say that. The most lethal of the two crashes was seven American servicemen and three agents with the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA. They all died, the 10, in one crash when their Chinook crashed in western Afghanistan after a firefight with Taliban insurgents. 26 people injured in that fight. And according to the military, the crash followed a gun battle with insurgents that broke out when the Americans and Afghans raided a compound believed to harbor drug traffickers. The Americans and the Afghans killed more than a dozen fighters. The Chinook crashed as the American and Afghan forces were leaving. Well, and the military is saying that that was not a result of hostile fire. Come on. Come on, guys. Look, I realize that, you know, the first casualty of war is the truth. But Jesus, God, come on. Come on. It was unclear exactly where either the firefight or the crash occurred in western Afghanistan. A spokesman of the American command said that officers were not disclosing the location because they wanted to protect the Americans who were still working at the scene to recover the helicopter. DEA agents often accompany American soldiers and Marines, according to the New York Times, on operations in Afghanistan. A spokesman for the American military, Captain Elizabeth Mathias, said the military was, quote, 98% sure, unquote, that insurgents had not caused the crash. In the second crash, four American servicemen died and two were injured when two helicopters collided. Military released few details but said that insurgents were not to blame. And two other American service members were killed in separate attacks over the weekend in eastern Afghanistan. I'll tell you, this is getting worse and worse, isn't it? Worse and worse and worse. And the war lovers are pushing and pushing and pushing for more Americans to go die and more Americans to go kill. And again, you know, I understand the geostrategic importance of Afghanistan to corporate, global corporate interests, including American corporations. But what is the interest where it concerns anything positive? What is the interest of corporate or military America where it concerns dignity and truth and justice and honor, morality? Doesn't exist. Nora is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hey, Nora.
Hey, Mike. I just want to say I can't even... Where does America, the United States, get off trying to say that we're over here in these other countries around the world having our little so-called war on drugs, phony war on drugs,
well,
and everyone's supposed to die for it?
Yeah, well, you know, illegal drug production fuels so many criminal enterprises. Look how it fueled both Bush administrations, right? Thanks, Nora. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be right back. Truth Seeker, stay with us. Before the hour, our crew consists of our technical advisor, Ben Birch, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy, economics correspondent, Bruce Enberg, educational correspondent, Kate Petrini, ethical advisors, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and or ethics advisors, I should say. Our engineer and producer, executive producer, is Kathy Bay. Leanne sent me a paragraph from a larger article that is at, the London Review of Books. It's a lengthy article that I'm going to read tonight, but a paragraph out of it. Leanne wrote, perhaps you've already seen this. I think it nails it very well. A similar thread to some of your on-air expressions. Here's what it says. This is from a much longer article, but it says, quote, for Obama to do the courageous thing and withdraw from Afghanistan would mean having deployed against him the unlimited wrath of the mainstream media, the oil interests, the Israel lobby, the weapons and security industries, all those who have reasons both avowed and unavowed for the perpetuation of American force projection in the Middle East. If he fails to satisfy the request from General McChrystal, the specialist in black ops who now controls American forces in Afghanistan, the war brokers will fall on Obama with as finely coordinated a barrage as if they had met and concerted their response. Beside that prospect, the calls of betrayal from the anti-war base that gave Obama his first victories in 2008 must seem a small price to pay. The best imaginable result just now, given the tightness of the trap, may be ostensible cooperation with the generals, accompanied by a set of questions that lays the groundwork for refusal of the next escalation. But in wars, there's always a deep beneath the lowest deep. And the ambushes and accidents tend towards savagery much more than conciliation. End quote. Well, I mentioned last week that my idea, and so far nobody has written to me that I've read. I haven't opened all the emails here that accumulated over the weekend, but nobody has written yet to dispute it, that the easiest way for Obama to put the American people in a position of either accepting a war or rejecting it, which is the way it should be, for God's sake, would be for Obama to stake his claim on reestablishing constitutional law in this country, especially where it concerns the horrific power of war making, and just come on television and give a speech and say, look, I've got people to the left of me who want this, people to the right of me who want this, crazy people who want that. So here's what we're going to do. The Constitution declares that I have no business making war. That's not my job. I'm the executive. That comes from the legislative branch. Therefore, I ask the United States Senate and eventually the Congress of the United States or the House for a joint resolution if it comes to this, but for the United States Senate to make a declaration of war against Afghanistan. And in so doing, a declaration of war brings into play all sorts of restrictions and rules and ups and downs and sidewayses and all kinds of stuff come into play that the War Powers Act or the cowardice of this Congress to deny funds doesn't bring into play. So let's go for it. Either go for it or don't go for it. I I know this is just nonsense fantasy, but can't you see Obama doing that? I mean, I can. I really can. Because then the military-industrial complex will have 535 people to work on instead of one. Well, actually, they'll have 100 to work on to begin with to get that declaration of war from the Senate. They'll have 100 people that they're going to have to convince. Now, 30 or 40 of them immediately will say, yes, war, kill! Those would, of course, be Republicans. As long as I don't have to go, or my kids. And having 100 people to work on to get your declaration of war, it diffuses your power considerably. If you just have one, you can focus like a laser. But when you have 100 you got to work on, it's more like a spotlight, you know, a big one, like on a lighthouse somewhere off the coast of Maine. So that's all Obama has to do. That's my simplistic answer to this problem in which he finds himself. What to do, what to do, what to do. Give it to the people who have the constitutional duty to decide whether or not we go to war. And it's not him. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.